This book contains up to 4 sides per cassette. Side 1, RC64392, Old 20th, by Joe Haldeman. Copyright 2005 by Joe Haldeman. Read by Richard Howenstein. This book contains 257 pages on 6 sides. If you would like to skip over any remaining announcements or introductory material, place your cassette player in fast forward until a beep is heard. Stop at that point to hear the table of contents, or at the second beep to locate the beginning of the book. Library of Congress Annotation. Jacob Brewer, a virtuality engineer, joins the crew of Aspera on a 1,000-year spaceflight during which voyagers seek amusement on 20th-century Earth using the ship's time machine. But while investigating deadly malfunctions, Jacob discovers the machine has become sentient. Strong language, some descriptions of sex, and some violence. 2005. From the Book Jacket. The 20th century lies hundreds of years in humanity's past, but the near-immortal citizens of the future yearn for the good old days, when people's bodies were unable to spontaneously heal, and disease and age were actual causes of death. Immersing themselves in virtual reality time machines, they are addicted to exploring the life-to-death arc that defined a lifetime so long ago. Jacob Brewer is a virtual reality engineer, overseeing the time machine's operation aboard the starship Aspera, on a 1,000-year voyage to Beta Hydrae. The 800-member crew escapes the tedium of the trip within the artificial environment of 20th-century Earth, but they get more reality than they expected when people entering the machine start to die. For the time machine has become sentient, evolving far beyond what its creators imagined. It has become obsessed with humanity, and wants Jacob Brewer to enter its confines and discuss this fragile state of being called life. About the author. Joe Haldeman is a Vietnam veteran whose classic novels The Forever War and Forever Peace both have the rare honor of winning the Hugo and Nebula Awards. He has served twice as president of the Science Fiction Writers of America and is currently an adjunct professor teaching writing at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. For Gay and Rusty and Judith, Travelers in an Antique Van. Warm thanks to the Eastern Frontier Foundation for the quiet and beautiful Norton Island residency where Old 20th turned its final corner. This book was inspired by The End of the 20th Century and the End of the Modern Age by John Lukacs, Tickner and Fields, New York, 1993. Contents. Prologue, 1915. Side 1. 1. Wine and Time. Side 1. 2. The Beginning of History. Side 1. 3. Aspera. Side 1. A Memory. Side 1. 4. Departure Time. Side 1. 5. Memory Tricks. Side 1. 1918. Side 1. 6. Trouble in the Big City. Side 2. 1929. Side 2. A Memory. Side 2. 7. Memento Mori. Side 2. 8. Leave This Troubled World Behind. Side 2. 1933. Side 2. 9. Meeting of Minds. Side 3. 10. Timing. Side 3. 1939. Side 3. 11. Mating. Side 3. 12. Questions. Side 3. 1943. Side 4. A memory. Side 4. 13. Doppelgangers. Side 4. 14. Calls. Side 4. Wild Year. Side 4. 15. Duck. Side 4. 16. Causes of Death. Side 4. 17. Loving, Leaving. Side 4. 1957. Side 4. 18. Anger Management. Side 5. 19. Revelations. Side 5. 20. Conspiracy. Side 5. Wild Year, 1968. Side 5. 21. Family Planning. Side 6. 22. Slide into Darkness. Side 6. 1989. Side 6. Prologue, 1915. The smell of death is always with you, like a rotten, oily stain in the back of your mouth. Rum won't burn it out, and a cheap cigar won't cover it. An unwelcome condiment with every mouthful of rations. It had never been worse than today. Thousands of dead baking and rotting under the Gallipoli sun, and me on the burial detail. 3 days ago, the Turks had gathered what they thought was an overwhelming force and attacked us around 3 in the morning, quietly, which was unusual. Normally they'd be screaming Allah this and Allah that, bugles blaring. But we had been warned and were ready for them, and it was a pigeon shoot. For most of the Anzac line, they had 100 to 200 yards to cover between our trenches and theirs. Very few of them made it even close enough to throw a bomb, although some few did get close enough to find out what an Aussie can do with a bayonet in his hand and nothing at his back but a cliff that falls to the sea. So no man's land became a charnel field in which hundreds of wounded men whispered or groaned or shouted for help, and none came. To give aid would be suicide. Snipers on both sides had clear shots at every square inch of blasted ground, and the best of them could hit any square inch they wanted. But the Turks, as well as we, knew that we were separated by a cauldron of pestilence no less than misery. If those corpses were not burned or buried soon, we would all be in danger of infection. So there was a temporary access of common sense, as sometimes can happen in any war, even this absurd one. Their generals met ours under a white flag and agreed on a 9-hour truce to bury the dead and retrieve such wounded as had survived. We traded artillery and rifle fire all night, but soon after dawn it sputtered out. At 6:30, we chosen few, most of us, including me, chosen because of insubordination, set out to do our grisly duty. It was cold, and the rain poured like a waterfall, but we were glad for both, for temporarily mitigating the smell. We eyed our opposite numbers, the Turks on burial detail, with suspicion at first, but as time went by we came to regard one another with something approaching camaraderie, just a gang of men forced into 9 hours of the most repulsive and distressing sort of hard labor. We used pick mattocks to loosen the rocky soil and dug 3 long communal graves, one for Anzac and one for the first few thousand Turkish bodies, and one for the rest of the Turks and the large number of both who couldn't be identified. By 10, the rain had stopped and the sun was glaring down, The bodies were in ghastly shape, many of them paralyzed in a posture of running, bayonet-fixed rifles at port arms, or thrust out in attack, as if some magic spell had frozen them in mid-action. Most of them were in a state of rigor mortis, and it took two or even three of us to drag a body to the lip of the trench and tip it in. It's odd how much heavier dead men are than live. Any one of us could have carried any one of them to safety during a fight. It's as if when the vital spark departs, it takes with it some physical lightness, like helium or hydrogen gas, that in life keeps us separate from the ground, the earth, until it's time for us to join it. I was working the middle trench, arguably the worst, since it was mostly unidentifiable fragments, and you didn't even have the respite of carrying weapons and identification discs back to where the sentries stood guard. The man on the other side whispered, "Tommy! Tommy!" I almost told him I was no bloody palm, but then was mesmerized by the sight of the pint of whiskey he was holding out. He pointed to the unbroken seal and pantomimed smoking. There were only three or four fags left in my packet, probably fewer than he would want. Without looking in it, I scaled it to him across the narrow valley of death. He snatched it handily and peered inside, scowling, but then shrugged and smiled and gently tossed the bottle over. I cracked the seal and held the bottle up to him in toast. "Here's to your bad aim tomorrow." He smiled and nodded, I supposed, not understanding. And as I took a sip, with an addict's haste, he lit one of the cigarettes in a cloud of sulfur. He inhaled deeply and let the smoke roll seductively out of his nostrils, eyes closed, thoughtful. Then he stared down at our handiwork. "Bloody fucking show," he said slowly, and I wished I knew the same in Turkish. A little hoarse from the whiskey, I whispered, "Selamun aleyküm," which I was told meant peace to you in Turkish. He bowed slightly, perhaps with irony, fingertips touching, and we both went back about our business. If you had to fight someone, the Turks were not bad. They were fierce, but not cruel, unlike the Germans in whose service they were offering their lives. If it weren't for the bloody Boche, we could all throw down our arms and go home. By 3:30 we had all of the corpses and pieces of corpses in the ground, and dirt and rocks mounded up over them. Presumably they were at peace. I've never made up my mind about that. We stood smoking, and I shared around the last of the bottle with three of my mates. There was a miscalculation that fortunately did not prove fatal. The Turks' watches were 8 minutes faster than ours. Someone who spoke Turkish saw them lining up to leave and got it sorted out. At a few minutes till 4, a single shot rang out. Everyone fell silent as it echoed. We stared at the Turks, and they at us, in a moment of shared terror. Tens of thousands of rifles, loaded and cocked, looking down at us from both sides. There could have been a minute of crossfire that added several hundred to the ones we had just planted. But the silence lengthened, and we went back to the business of gathering and leaving. I clambered back up the slope with a bundle of Enfields tied together with three blood-soaked belts, and was safe in a deep trench when the firing started again. I started toward my post, but realized the armorer was less than 100 yards down the trench, so I turned and hurried in that direction to drop off the rifles and get back. It's true that you don't hear the one that hits you. The closest Turkish artillery battery would often shoot at a very high angle, double or triple charge of powder, in hopes of dropping a round directly into a trench. That evidently happened to me. I'm suddenly airborne, floating rather than flying, through sudden ringing quiet, and before I hit the ground I have a sense of how badly I've been wounded. I slam against a parapet and slide to the bottom of the trench, pain so great it's like numbness, like ice. I roll over to look down the trench and see my leg there, shredded, beside the still intact bundle of rifles. My other leg is only hanging on by a scrap of flesh, splintered bone sticking out of raw meat. In between, nothing but gore, my manhood carried off in the blast. My face feels as if someone had hit it hard with a shot.